Friends, this is Susie Larson, and thanks so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. To learn more about the show and to listen to other Live the Promise shows, log on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. So glad you tuned in. Happy Friday. Hope you've had a great week and some fun weekend plans ahead. Well, quick announcement before we hear my discussion with Bill and Pam Farrell on preparing for marriage. We would love to pray for you this year. So what's your hope for 2014? How are you asking God to move on your behalf? Go to our website, myfaithradio.com. On the main page, there's a link that says My Prayer for 2014. Just click there and enter your prayer request. And every week during our staff meetings, we'll pray as a team and bring your situation before the Lord. And we want you to know it's really an honor to serve you this way. We've already prayed over struggling families, health issues, financial stresses, and it's been our honor to do so. You know, it's important to remember that even when we're in the darkest places, God is still with us and He's working. And I pray this hour will encourage you in that truth. Now, this discussion is full of practical wisdom, and I can't emphasize this enough. If you're in a serious relationship and talking about moving forward to marriage, you'll want to listen to this whole program, especially with your significant other. I pray this gives you the tools and wisdom you need to move forward in your relationship. And if you want to share it, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com. Click the share button next to the podcast link. As I said, we're talking to Bill and Pam today, and here's my question for you. Looking back, what do you wish you and your spouse would have discussed before you got married? And I asked the question on Facebook. We'll cover some of those answers. Looking back, what do you wish you and your spouse would have discussed before you got married? Let me tell you about our guests, and we'll get them on the show. Bill and Pam Farrell are authors, speakers, and co-founders and co-directors of LoveWise, an organization to help people connect love and wisdom and bring practical insights to their personal relationships. They've written more than, count them, 30 books, including Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti, and Red Hot Monogamy. They've been married more than 30 years and have raised three young men who love Jesus and athletics. You can learn more about them on the web at lovewise.com. Bill and Pam, glad to have you back with us again today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Susie. It's always awesome to chat with you.
Yeah, good to be back. We promise this will be a fun show.
Yeah. I think you can actually keep that promise because you can't help it. You guys are like party favors, I'm telling you. Anyway.
That's a new one. I like it.
Yeah, you take that with you. Okay, so as you know, we like to start out talking scripture, and you chose 1 John 4:19. We love because He first loved us. As we're working on Bill's phone, Pam, speak to that passage.
You know, that was our life verse, because Bill and I come from such dysfunctional places, you know, firstborn daughter, an alcoholic dad with severe rage issues, you know, on my side of the fence.
And I grew up in a home that with a very creative mom who was in charge, but afraid of almost everything.
Mm.
And so life was just run by fear in the home I grew up in.
And so because of that, we knew that love would only flourish. It would only survive if God loved through us. We couldn't do it on our own. We needed His power to make it happen. And that's what we've seen. You know, we've been happily married now for over 34 years, and it's the God factor that makes all the difference.
Hmm. You know, my third son just got married, our oldest. He was the last to get married. But the pastor said, you know, right now you're feeling so in love. But he said maturity will happen when you start to learn how to love, to go from feeling in love to really learning to love. And I'm wondering for both of you, because marriage is work, when did you have to really engage your faith in that passage, we love because He first loved us, when you weren't being carried along anymore, maybe by the emotion of feeling in love, but where you had to dig deep and learn to love?
Oh, wow. It was actually probably while we were dating, because we knew we had everything in us that would blow this relationship out of the water in a bad way. I mean, because my needs were so high. I was such a drama queen. And so I really had to go to God early in our dating, and we actually ran our dating lives kind of countercultural to what you might see on TV. And we kept taking, like, the high road on everything. And Bill had this really cute little notebook that before we could go out, you know, on a date, bowling, to the beach, whatever, we had to stop and answer his relationship questions in this little spiral-bound notebook.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys are impressive.
See, I didn't have any answers. I only had questions.
But that's wisdom to ask the questions. I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, I've since learned that the more questions you ask, the wiser you get.
Exactly.
And that's actually what made me fall in love with him, because I thought any man that would care this much about our relationship and wanting to run it God's way and wanting to protect me in the relationship, this is a good guy. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And you would have to have been very teachable. You know, I asked a question on Facebook, looking back, are there any issues you wish you and your spouse would have discussed? And prevailing answers were finances and faith. But there were a number of people who said, I wouldn't have listened anyway. And so let's take that last answer. I wouldn't have listened anyway. What do you think it's the bottom of that when you've got somebody, you know, a young woman going, I'm getting married and I don't want to hear what you have to say, let alone ask the questions, Bill, that you're suggesting?
Right. Well, there's probably a few factors going on. Depending on the age of the young woman, sometimes it's just sheer panic. You know, I'm in my late 20s, I'm in my early 30s, this is my only shot, I'm going to make it work, I don't care if I have to shoehorn this thing to make it work. And so a little bit of panic can set in when it doesn't need to. You know, God loves you, you're a beautiful woman, the world is handed to you by God to make a difference in this world, and there's lots of ways that can happen, and this young man, it may not be the only way, you know? Mm. So it's prudent to listen to the people around you as they're saying, I'm not sure about this. That's usually God's yellow flashing light that you should stop, push pause, and reevaluate. But oftentimes, women are like, nope, I want that wedding. I've been planning this. I have the binder. We're doing this thing.
Mm. Wow.
And so I think, like, there's lots of reasons we could list, but I think it falls under the category of most people approach marriage in a casual manner. And what I mean by that is they don't look at it like a career or an education. They just look at it as, this is part of the casual part of my life, and so if I'm in love with this person, that's enough.
So they let life kind of, it's like getting on an inner tube and floating, you know, the river. That's how people oftentimes look at love, is we're just going to get on the inner tube together and we're just going to float through life. It's all going to be good. And they forget that there's rapids. They forget that, yeah, you probably should have a life jacket. Mm. You should know what this water is that you're in.
Yeah.
And but people tend to not pay close enough attention to the most vital relationship other than a relationship with God that you'll ever have in a lifetime.
Well, and to give you a real personal example, Susie, I knew pretty early in my college years that I wanted to be in ministry. And somebody told me, Bill, if you're going to be in ministry, you need to marry somebody who's as committed to ministry as you are, or it won't work. And fortunately, I did that. Pam, her heart is in ministry, and so I've been able to pursue that dream my whole life. But I have a lot of friends whose heart was in ministry, but they married somebody whose heart wasn't. And they've had to give up that dream in order to maintain their marriage.
And that dream could be anything. You know, it could be politics, it could be medicine, it could be, you know, business. We just have to look at the big picture. Are we better together or separate? And if God is calling us together, we're a power team. And we have to see, what is my dream? What has God placed on my heart as my passion, my zeal, my calling, my adventure? How about the person I'm in love with? What's their calling, their passion, their zeal, and adventure? Are those meshing? Are we going the same direction? And if we're going the same direction, we can become amazing as a strong, you know, unit for good and for glory and for love in this world. And our family can be one that is a bright light in our church and community.
Mm, that's so good. Go ahead.
See, those are questions most people don't ask.
Right.
Most people just say, is she beautiful? Does she make me feel better about myself? Will he protect me?
How much money does it make?
And we stopped there. Like in our relationship, like I was just taken with Pam. I think she's the cutest lady God ever made on the face of the earth. Mm. And her energy level is off the charts, and I love that. It never occurred to me to ask. Like when I was growing up, my mom made all the decisions in our family, and it bothered me that I didn't get to be part of the decision-making process. And it never occurred to me to ask, is Pam going to do that same thing? And it turns out Pam's a very strong personality, and so there are times she just makes decisions, which intellectually I know she has the right to do that and the privilege to do that. But I've had to work through my own attitude towards that, because it's easy for me to project my feelings about my mom onto Pam when Pam makes a strong decision.
And I've had to learn to follow Bill's lead and to be sensitive that this is a hot button issue. And so there's landmines. Every couple will have landmines in their relationship, and you don't know they're there until
you step on it.
Yeah, or you sit down and say, where could they possibly be? And because of our families of origin, because of where we grew up, because of our culture, if you do some thinking ahead of time, you'll be able to have a map through that landmine field.
And so I'm thinking of that person listening going, I wouldn't even know where to begin by asking these questions. And, you know, we're so blessed because in your new book, there's this self-evaluation exercise to help take some inventory. So let's look at some of these areas that you really address and even maybe suggest a specific goal for each of these. So emotional, here's an area that what are you looking at when you're looking at the emotional aspect of each person?
You know, the overall goal of those exercises is to be Tob. And Tob just means good, beautiful, functioning as God intended. So you're trying to get all the spokes on the wheel moving forward. And so emotional, like, are you emotionally ready to be in a relationship? Has your heart been healed? Have you dealt with any past hurts? Have you closed the doors on past relationships? Or are you still trying to keep your options open even though you say you're in this relationship? Are you emailing other people? Are you Facebooking other people? Like, how emotionally strong and ready are you for a relationship?
And your emotional readiness shows up in two very distinct areas. First, it shows up in how you handle money. Because Jesus himself said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So we are all emotionally tied to money. And early on, when you start getting serious about a relationship, you want to have a conversation about money pretty early on. Because you're going to see how emotional people are when you start to challenge the way they either spend or save or invest money.
Mm.
Because we all express our emotional makeup through the way we handle money. Like some people, they want authority with money. They want to be able to use money to get things done. Other people use money to create memories and to build relational connections with other people. Some people, they want to simplify money so it doesn't create stress in their life. And other people want to handle money the right way, that there is a budget we follow and there's a right way to handle it. And when you start having that conversation, you're going to find out the person you're in love with probably handles money different than you. And if they aren't emotionally ready to be married, it's just going to become a big fight when you talk about it.
Which really goes back to the answer on Facebook. So many who've been married a while said, I wish we would have talked about finances.
Yeah.
And yet I'm sure for that person newly dating, just being carried along that love river that you're talking about, would feel like this is administration. You're asking us to get out of our inner tube, get on the side of the bank and open the notebook.
Right.
But that's exactly what you're saying, isn't it?
It is.
And later on, one of the other areas is financial, and that's when you have to take a hard look, like, how much debt am I bringing in? How much debt is he bringing in? You know, do we have the ability to pay our bills together as a couple? So are we even financially, is it feasible for us? And you know, we're not talking about lots of money, because Bill and I got married. Bill owned.
He laughs.
Two pairs of pants.
We walked by faith.
Oh, yeah. Two pairs of pants. One had a rip in the knee. He drove a blue Vega with a green back door. I mean, I did not marry the man for his money.
Silent.
We had like two pieces of furniture. One was a bed and one was a stereo. That's it. That's all we owned when we got married. So it's not like we have to have a lot of money, but we had a roof over our head. We had some food in the refrigerator, and then we were willing to work hard and as students at 20 years old. And so it's not just, you know, is he making big bank? No. What's their work ethic? and how hard are they willing to work to provide for a family, especially if a crisis might hit? Do they show up and keep their word? And so in the area of finances, when you're looking for Tobe, it's not just the bottom line in the checkbook. It's what's in the heart.
Really, because you could be somebody who makes six figures and be so selfish and kind of a dictator when it comes to how you manage relationships. So, okay, so the emotional readiness, one of the questions you ask in the book is, are you stable psychologically, socially? Do people, especially leaders and peers, see you as stable, loving, caring, and a well-adjusted person? And then the goal is a change I would like to make to become more Tobe or more beautiful and excellent in this area. Before we unpack a little more on that financial piece, what would a goal look like here emotionally, an emotional goal? How do you do that?
Setting an emotional goal is you would want to say, okay, how loving, stable, caring, and well-adjusted. If you're seeing that you, let's say, you get angry when the person that you love, you know, doesn't do what you want or steps in front of your goals, like the emotional goal would be to discover why I'm getting angry and to meet with a mentor or a counselor to try to correct that before I get engaged.
Good. That's easy.
And the key, Susie, is like the principle I wish I had heard earlier in life is that emotions follow decisions. And when you look at the way Jesus works with people, he always gives them a little bit of information and then calls them to a decision. Because he wants them to decide to do what they know is right, and then their emotions follow behind it and give them energy for that decision.
That's good. So
when we're talking about emotional goal, it's what choice do I need to make to get more emotionally healthy? Do I need to read something? Do I need to meet with somebody? Do I need to change my behavior? Like, I'm so proud of Pam when she realized that anger ran through her family. And when we started having kids, she decided that when she was upset with the kids, she would whisper. And that choice to whisper changed the dynamic in her to where the anger actually subsided. And it started to become strategic focus on how to help our kids be better people.
Oh, that is so good. So you're really, really taking a practical inventory and then even asking the Lord, what's this next step? And so on the financial one, the question you asked was, are you earning, saving, and spending money in a way to stabilize and provide for your life today and prepare well for tomorrow? And here again, you could make a practical financial goal. But if someone's all over the map with their finances, that's something to look at before you make a commitment to do life together, right?
Exactly. And we have a humorous, there were two couples that were a part of our life. They both were the same age, young and in love and engaged. And the two girls were shopping together, and one of the girls found a purse that was on sale. And it was still $250. And the other, it said, that's not a sale to her girlfriend. And you probably should call your fiance and ask about that one. And so she did, and his response was, $250, that's not a sale. And so they had to have a conversation on what does a sale really mean as they head into, you know, this marriage relationship. And so looking at the homes of origin you came from and your standard of living and deciding, okay, our new family, what does it mean for our new family? What level of saving, spending, how much should we check in with each other? How much freedom do we have? Those are just all conversations that are vital to have as you meld your lives together.
Because if you don't, there are going to be fights because you're going to have to deal with finances in marriage, right, Bill?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, finances is like it's like the fuel that you put in the tank that makes your whole life run. Like Jesus says we shouldn't be in love with money, but Jesus has more to say about money than just about any other topic on earth because he knows it is a tool that drives everything forward. And so you're not only going to have to deal with money, but you're going to have to be good at dealing with money as a couple.
And, you know, you have to plan a wedding together, and that is where a lot of this will show up. So it's nice to be able to have some of these conversations while you're dating. That's why we encourage pre-engagement counseling. So before you even get that ring and start paying for, you know, those payments to before you propose, you should have some of these financial discussions ahead of time because even the decision to buy a ring and how big that ring is and how much to spend on it, that's a reflection of your new value system as a couple.
Mm.
And so it's important. It shows up everywhere.
Well, and again, Susie, every financial decision you make as a couple affects the emotional atmosphere of your relationship. So if you are bad at making financial decisions together, over time, the emotional atmosphere is going to erode in your home. And it's one of the reasons why we see couples who are married 15 and 20 years, they don't even like each other anymore. Like, we know they used to be in love, but they have stacked decision on top of decision on top of decision that eroded their emotional connection, and now it looks like they're more like enemies than love, a loving couple.
Yeah, and the important thing there, that's such a tragedy, and that happens over and over again, is you can be different and come together and do what you're saying, be humble enough to kind of even learn from each other, where suddenly your weaknesses might become stronger. You might become strong in that area because you're actually learning from your spouse. You see that too, where couples balance each other out and they say, as you said, Pam, at the beginning, we're actually better together because I've learned this from him, right?
Exactly. And, you know, we do tend to marry opposites in personality, same level of emotional pain. And so that opposite in personality is, this world only needs one Pam Farrell. That's like ample. It does not need more than one Pam Farrell.
But at the same time, Susie, like, I actually think you've understated it, because our family needed Pam's approach to finances, because I'm prone to simplify everything, which means I would have cut out a lot of the experiences that our kids have had in life, because Pam had a sense that they needed to have these experiences, even though it was going to cost us a little bit of money.
Hmm.
And so our family is healthier because we are different in the way we approach finances.
And that's true of all the different areas that you're trying to become tobe, is you're completing one another. And that's what Genesis really says, you know, that we're helpmeet and you were designed. The word that when God says that he made Eve, it's the word design or manufacture. And so if you think about how often that maybe deep couples in love say, oh, you were made for me. It's like we were made for each other. It's like you were made in heaven. Yeah, it's true.
Right.
God did design your mate to complete and complement.
Right. So when it comes to finances, the question that people need to ask is not, is this person different than me, but is this person responsible? Because we want to marry somebody that's different than us in this area. We just want them to be responsibly different.
Mm, boy, that's a good word. So we're kind of taking a look at some of these areas of reflection, kind of a self-inventory to just assess the readiness to get married. Another one is intellectual, and you ask the question, are you willing to grow in your knowledge about how relationships work and the skills that lead to lifelong healthy love? Here again, the opposite of that would be, I'm fine. I don't really... Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good. This is for her.
Yeah. We don't need pre-engagement counseling. We don't need premarital counseling. We don't need to read any books. Like, I'm good. I'm fine.
Mm. I actually had a guy tell me that recently, Susie. Yeah, I'm coming to this meeting for her because it's helping her a lot.
Whoa.
I know.
Mm.
He didn't make any points with her with that one.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, the key to this, Susie, is nobody was born good at relationships. It's a learned skill. And so every year, if you're adding to your skill level, you find marriage to be very fascinating. And if you just decide you don't need to grow, then life passes you up. And marriage changes roughly every 7 years. Like I like to jokingly say, I've been married to 6 different people, and they're all named Pam. Because the relationship changes every 7 years, and so new skills are needed, and new attitudes are needed, and a new adventure starts.
Yeah, Greg and Aaron Smalley say that they read a marriage book every year, a new one. At the beginning of the year, they grab a marriage book and go through it together just because they want to stay curious about each other. And I think that communicates such value to the other spouse and to the marriage, doesn't it?
It does. And Bill and I were marriage educators. We do marriage conferences, but we also go to marriage conferences. We listen to other marriage educators because nobody knows everything, you know, except for Jesus. And so if we want a growing marriage, we want to be investing. It's just like putting money in the bank. When you invest in, you know, good counsel, in mentoring relationships, in attending conferences, in buying and reading a book on marriage and relationships, it's like putting emotional money in the bank. And when times get tough and you go through a harsh storm in life, there'll be something to draw upon, and you'll stay close because you've invested in your relationship.
And I do find it fascinating, Susie. This December, Pam and I will have been married 34 years. I probably know Pam as well as anybody on earth, and I still don't understand her. So I'm still in the learning process, still curious about how she could be so different than me, and we've been at it for over 30 years.
Mm, boy, and you do it in such a winsome way, though. It's just beautiful. Talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today. They've got another new book out, The Before You Marry Book of Questions. We got one copy of this book and one copy of their best-selling Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. Fantastic book. So if you're already married and you want the Waffle Spaghetti book, give us a call, 877-933-2484. If you are about to get married or you know someone who is, then you can request the Before You Marry book. But now we're opening those phone lines with questions, 877-933-2484. We'll be right back.
Worlds came crashing together and true love story began. I am falling, you are paying. I am night and you are the day. We're like sunshine and rain. We're so different from each other. You are a woman, I am man. You're the sea and I am the land. And I would not be who I am if I didn't have you.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to our friends Bill and Pam Farrell. They got a brand new book out titled The Before You Marry Book of Questions. So important, really helping you take a look at your marriage readiness. So God wants to have you enjoy this time of courtship, dating, engagement, but also he wants you to be ready so that you're set up for success. And so we've been going for this inventory, through this inventory that you list in your book. We talked about emotional readiness, financial readiness, intellectual readiness. Talk about vocational readiness.
Yeah, do you have a job? A man with a job is, like, really attractive these days.
And you know, the reality of our lives is we were put on earth to make a difference. And every one of us has a talent. Every one of us has a skill. Every one of us has a gift that is designed to help other people. And it gets expressed in a vocational pursuit. And so somebody who's going to reach their potential in life has to have some kind of career goal. And I would just say to the guys listening, any woman whose only goal in life is to get married to you doesn't have a big enough goal. And they will eventually just suck the life out of you because you will be responsible for everything in her life.
Yeah.
And as much as, I mean, we believe in marriage, but we also believe one of the reasons our marriage is so strong is that we're both living our purpose.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot to add to the relationship. And because Pam has continued to grow in her career without throwing it out of balance with our family, she has continued to be a fascinating individual.
And, you know, that discussion about the whole, this is the time when you start talking about kids and who's going to raise the kids and who's going to take care of the kids and at the different ages and stages, that's all part of the vocational discussion as well, is how we're going to balance having a thriving marriage, having a thriving family, and having a thriving career or careers. And, you know, just being on the same page. And I just want to put a little plug out there for all of us that are parents. We've had three, we have three sons. Two of them have gotten married. And one of them got married at 21, and we got married at 20. And oftentimes parents say to their college student, yeah, don't get married until after you finish college. And I think sometimes our priorities as Christian parents can be askew, because what we, Bill and I, wanted for our sons was the ability to follow God's path and God's timing, even if it wasn't our timing as parents. And I want them to be able to follow God with a whole heart, to maintain purity and excellence and integrity in their relationship. So if that meant that God brought their mate during college, I had to be okay with that, because that was up to God, not up to me.
I so appreciate that, Pam. And that same thing happened to my middle son. And I remember I had a friend who, she said, we pushed our son, wait till college. And so they were holding that standard of purity so high. She said, I watched something almost unnatural happen, where this relationship that was just winsome and wonderful morphed into this friendship, because it was almost like they had this overdeveloped muscle. We can't come near each other.
Yeah,
and they,
right.
My parents are making us wait. And she said they eventually broke up. And she said, I feel sad. Like, this was a very strong potential of a mate. And with my middle son, Luke, was same thing, 21 years old. But that kid, he scraped money together and took out two different couples with his girlfriend. and who'd been married young and been married now 7-8 years. What were some of the hard things? What were some of the good things? He met with a financial guy. He had no financial picture whatsoever, but he's like, this is what I have. This is what I'm planning. Any concerns? And, you know, and he submitted himself to instruction on every level. And I thought, at 21 and 22 years old, you're doing what more than a lot of, you know, 30-year-olds would do.
And 40-year-olds even, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And he was ready. And I so respect that you said that, because so often we make a pat answer around that. And I love that you said that. I've got, let's see, we've got Dan calling in from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And he's got a question for you today. Dan, welcome. You're on with the Farrells.
Hi.
Hey, what's your question?
Dan. Lately, God has been talking to me about playing the blame game within my marriage, but I'm still struggling when we have something go wrong, we end up blaming each other, and then that descends into a big argument and a big fight. I just need practical advice to. How to bite my tongue.
Well, don't we all, yeah.
Well, I'll just share with you what we did, because you just described my parents' marriage. So what I grew up around was the blame game and yelling and screaming, and my parents even went to the place of throwing things. And so when we got married, I decided we're not going to do that. And what Pam and I did that helped me the most is we actually wrote a conflict covenant. And we said, when we are upset with each other and when we are in an argument with each other, here's what we will do and here's what we will not do.
You know, things like, I promise that I'm not going to run over you with my car. I'm not going to throw something at you. We hold hands when we argue, and the reason why is I'm just less likely to throw stuff. So.
Very good.
And we decide ahead of time words that we would not use. Mm. We even decided if we're so upset we can't talk rationally, we're going to take a break for a specified amount of time. So we would say, I can't talk right now. Let's meet in a half hour. Or let's get together in an hour. Or let's get together first thing tomorrow morning. And again, because we made decisions about what we're going to do, our emotions calm down. And what most couples don't do, and what it sounds like, Dan, you get caught up in, is we don't decide what we're going to do. We just react. And one reaction leads to another reaction, which leads to another reaction, which leads to another reaction. But you have the ability to decide ahead of time what you're going to do. And it will take a little bit of practice, but you have the ability to do it. You just want to decide when you're not upset what you're going to do when you do get upset.
Right.
That's so good. You know, and I think when it's not a hot moment, when Dan, if you can step back and get with the Lord and even say, what is underneath all this? I know for me, when I retrace my steps and get with God, there's always something that got buried before it was dead that I need to reconcile and fix. And so maybe that will help you too. God bless you, Dan. You get a copy of Farrell's Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. You'll laugh, but you'll also be very equipped for that marriage of yours. Linda is calling in from Plymouth, Minnesota. Linda, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you so very much. I love your show.
Oh, so glad.
It seems like what I've been hearing is that you're speaking to young couples just starting out. What about us old duffers who have been there before and have had a fail, you know, whatever? I am at the stage of my life, and I'm in a serious relationship, and we seem to be a lot alike, but I'm at the stage of my life where I've ran a household for decades, raised 2 children on my own, you know, I've got a home. I haven't lost anything. I took care of my parents' finances, and I'm ready to relinquish to him to, you know, you handle it. You know, I mean, of course, we talk about the big purchases, that kind of stuff. But, you know, just give me a budget to work with when grocery, I grow my vegetables, I freeze, I can. I love doing that. You know, I'm not a frivolous person, but I don't like money. I don't want to deal with it. You know what
I
mean?
And even the feeling of, I'm sure, being in charge, where you're carrying everything all the time, Linda. I think I hear that a lot from especially moms who've been single moms. After a while, they just don't want to be the one who's shouldering all that. What do you guys say?
Yeah, it is. Sometimes that's exactly one of the blessings of being a partnership, is that there are things on both sides of the equation. If you have been single for a while, that it's nice to share that responsibility. In the same way, we people, when you blend two lives later on, and there's blended family, and especially if there's children involved, you know, second time marriages end more than 60% of the time, third time's marriages end 87% of the time. So it's even more important to do pre-engagement counsel with a good counselor and with a resource like the Before You Marry Book of Questions, with a mentor couple that maybe blended their families, because there's different issues that are even more important that come up when you already have a life and you already have finances and you already have children that are involved.
Well,
that can be sticky wicky.
Let me jump in real quick. Linda, you're going to get the copy of the Before You Marry Book of Questions. So, and as we're going through this inventory, Bill, these issues, relational, vocational, intellectual, apply to someone later in life as well, don't they?
Well, of course. And I know I'm going to jump to a conclusion here, but Linda's statements is a good example of how people develop perfectionism in their life. Because it's interesting, Linda said, I used to do it all, and now I want somebody who will just take it and do it for me. And it sounds like she's bouncing from one extreme to another. And where life really is lived is in the middle, where we all take appropriate responsibility, and we evaluate the relationship and say, boy, if she finds somebody that's more gifted with money than her, by all means we want that person to kind of oversee finances, but it doesn't relieve us of our financial responsibility. And so what we want to find is that sweet spot in the middle where we're all carrying our responsibility, where we're all contributing, and we're all adding to the emotional health of our relationship.
And so
it's a great, I mean, again, I took some leaps in logic there, but I see so many people do that.
Yeah.
That rather than sit and evaluate, hey, how can we have the healthiest relationship possible with the makeup between us, we jump from one extreme to another and look for people to rescue us, or we find people we need to rescue.
And I think, you know, the balance there is, you know, we can do this so easily in marriage, and you mentioned this earlier, Bill, where one looks to the other as a source and not a gift. And I'm Linda, I'm not saying you're doing that, but we can shift into that. I think women, we look to our men to be our source of everything, protection, and sometimes men will look to women to be the source of, well, I won't even get into it. I'll let you guys talk about that on another show.
Like,
you know what I mean? 877-933-2484. But as you said, Bill, to remember the balance in it all, and that Jesus is our source. Paul is waiting on hold patiently to chime into the conversation, calling in from Columbia Heights. Paul, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. How are you?
Hi, Paul.
Good, thank you. I just kind of had a comment. You know, I'm real wise in the ways of marriage, you know, been happily married for a whole 2.5 years.
Great.
You guys talked earlier about kind of the most common things, and I think you said money and faith. I'm blessed to have a wife that loves the Lord. So for me, it would be, I would say that the most important things to talk about before marriage would be the way that you're going to handle money and the way that you're going to handle discipline with kids.
Yep.
Because that seems to be, at times, a point of contention between us. I'm, you know, maybe a little harsher than she is. So.
Yeah, children would be, like, as I mentioned it, children are, like, huge. If you have kids or if you're going to have kids, you have to have that conversation. What kind of homes did we come from? How was it handled in our house? How do we want to handle? Really all the book of questions before you get married is helping people decide ahead of time on vital areas in life, you know, whether it's work or children or your household or the level of economy. What does integrity look like? How are we going to worship as a new family? It's looking at that new family unit, and you are right on in that there's some really important discussions that need to happen even before you conceive. Actually would be a good time to have those conversations.
And Paul, I appreciate your comment, because none of us are objective about our children.
Yeah.
We all think they're the most incredible, most talented, most beautiful, and most irritating people on the face of the earth. And I'm really patient with your kids. Susie, I'm really patient with your kids. Mm. My kids I'm intense with.
Mm.
And if you're on the same page as parents, that intensity helps one another. If you disagree as parents, that intensity leads to some really strong disagreements.
Mm. Wise words, Paul. You are a wise married man, so we appreciate you chiming into the conversation. I think we actually have an extra book to send out to you. So maybe you want to chime in. We've probably got about 10 more minutes to take your calls, 877-933-2484. So we addressed some of the inventory questions, but I'm going to jump to a section of the book that's Are You Ready for Love? And here are some questions you ask. Have you been on your own? Are you out of debt? Do you have a strong plan and direction for your life? You know, this debt one is so hard, you guys, with the costs of college. I talked to a friend the other day, and they had some friends this young man who's about to get married, they each are coming into the marriage with something like $140,000 in college debt.
Wow.
How in the world is a person supposed to plan a life when they're carrying that kind of debt? And what are they supposed to do then?
That's amazing. The most important part is full disclosure, because then together you make a plan on how you're going to manage this, because you're starting out with a heavy burden, and so how are you going to, as a couple, pay it off, and at what rate, what is legitimate, how is it going to work in real life to be paying down this much debt, and also that's a time to think, do we want to do something really different and have a very simple wedding and have the money that would have gone to like this elaborate party go to something that will actually take the pressure off of us? You know, I think in our society, we sometimes have we don't put the first things first. And we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in the wedding industry, and then people are like, and I have to pay the pastor $50 to do the vows.
And because I've performed a lot of weddings, people always ask me, so Bill, what do you charge? And I like to jokingly tell them, well, just give me the same that you're giving the florist and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
And then they fall off their chair and pick themselves back up.
But we think, you know, a down payment on a house or lowering our debt with a simple, beautiful, personalized wedding might be much better for a young couple that has that kind of a burden when they're going in. And sometimes we make decisions, again, as parents, because we want to look good to our peers. And you know what? God already says we look good. Mm. We are His kids. And we are all sinful, so we all have the same sin nature, but we all look good. We're His kids. And so our self-image shouldn't be tied up with our kids' wedding. It should be what's best for those young people getting married.
And you sure can see starting out to save face and spending money you don't have to save face. Again, people are doing that in their 30s and 40s, and they're, you know, one payment away from losing their home. And so you're so right that it's a powerful and negative motivator, isn't it?
Right. And I can tell you, people who come, you know, in for counseling, they don't refer to how beautiful their wedding was. They always refer to, how did our relationship get in this kind of shape?
Wow. Such a good point. Well, talk about that, Bill, about spiritual readiness. You, in fact, you make a distinction between inspirational readiness and spiritual readiness. You know, one kind of a conviction to be serving others and your own personal walk with God. Talk more about that.
Well, spiritual readiness, it really comes down to the question, is this person I'm thinking about tying my life to at the same level of spiritual commitment that I am?
Do they have a relationship with God? What does that relationship look like? How do they follow God? How do they worship God? Am I comfortable with the answers that I'm getting?
Right, because so often we say, well, you should marry a Christian. But the Christian life, people live that on a continuum.
And people use that word and throw it around without a lot of meaning sometimes.
And there are some people who are very casual about their faith, and they just, you know, they show up and they wave to Jesus, and then they go about their way. And there's other people that want to know how to walk with Jesus and follow Him every step of their life. And if you're going to be spiritually unified, you have to first of all figure out where you are on that question. And if you marry somebody who is on a different place than you are, it's going to be irritating to you.
And if you're both like, what? Spiritual what? That right. might be a really good first conversation to have with that right. pastor, that clergy person that might be performing your wedding, or that counselor. And we think every couple should have at least 4 to 6 sessions of pre-engagement counseling. So that's a great question to bring up to that counselor, is like, what is a spiritual life and how do we develop it? And we actually walk you through that in the Before You Marry book of questions so that you can grow as a couple together and with God, because God is going to be the strength, the source, the power of your love.
And then the inspirational question is based on the fact that the most selfless pursuit in life is marriage, and parenting. That when you decide to take your whole life and connect it to another person, you have to be able to be relatively selfless to make that happen. And you have to be able to give to the other person. And the only way to tell if this person is a naturally giving individual is to ask, are they giving their life away to anybody else?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, are they volunteering anywhere? Are they influencing anybody else for good? Because if they're not doing it out there, they're probably not going to do it in your marriage.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And if they are doing it out in their community, they're probably going to do that with you also.
Mm, excellent advice. Well, I love this in the chapter, Are We Compatible? You've got four different kinds of lovers. And first of all, I'm going to read them and describe them and as you describe them here. But I want to know which each of you are. I'm just so curious. So lover number one is knight in shining armor or queen of hearts. And the descriptions are extroverted, task-oriented, likes control of decisions, likes people to cooperate with their plan, adventurous, usually in charge, and they're motivated by authority. That's lover number one. Lover number two is a hopeless romantic, extroverted, people-oriented, spontaneous, likes new adventures, center of attention, fun, does not like boring, likes personal touches, motivated by attention. Lover number three, wind beneath my wings, introverted, people-oriented, relaxed, easygoing, likes time to talk, likes low stress, takes life as it comes, motivated by admiration. Finally, lover number four, true blue lover, introverted, task-oriented, likes predictable, likes scheduled activities, likes routine, believes everyone should do what they say, motivated by accuracy. Very interesting. So, Bill, which one are you?
Well, most of the time I'm lover number three. And motivated by admiration, when Pam says, man, it is so good to have you in my life because you're an amazing person, my motivation level goes sky high. Under stress, I go to lover number four, which is the true blue lover.
Mm-hmm.
And I want us to do things right when I'm under stress.
Interesting.
Get it right, be accurate.
How about you, Pam?
Yeah. Without stress, my nature is that hopeless romantic, extroverted, people-oriented, spontaneous, fun. But under stress...
Motivated by attention. Way to go, Pam. You were awesome there.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, he's just going to rent out that with the stadium for the Vikings and invite all my friends. We'll have a party. But under stress, I turn into that lover number one, and I want to take control, and let's get some action going here.
So okay.
A little bossy under stress.
Interesting that you guys make the distinction between stress. So we really do change our approach and even kind of what we think we need under stress.
It's why going on vacation together is so important. Because it relieves the stress. It helps you get back to who you are when you're in a low-stress environment, and it reignites your love for one another. Because none of us fall in love with the person we are under stress.
We
fall in love with the person you are naturally.
And so we always think the whole, bring the honeymoon home. You know, keep that honeymoon going. And we oftentimes tease after a bride and groom get married, it's not the bride and groom that need the honeymoon. It's both sets of in-laws.
Yeah. True that. So talk about the weight that someone should give to the other person's family. How does that chime in, and how much do you give that?
You know, we marry each other's families. And, you know, when we wrote the Before You Marry Book of Questions, two of our sons had gotten married, and the first met when I did a book signing in Hannah's parents' Christian bookstore. So we're all into arranged marriages, we like to joke. But there was a lot of common family values shared, because we were definitely coming from the same industry, both in Christian publishing. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes you're coming from different points of view. Sometimes your families are on different coasts, different cultures, different hurts and pains. And in the world we live in, a lot of times there's blended families, broken families. It might not be, you know, mom and dad's name on the invitation. There might be like a whole set of eight people on one side of the equation. And so there's a lot of brokenness, and you have to know, what am I getting into?
And
what is
the key, Susie, it isn't so much can I tell that person's family. It's, has the person I'm thinking about marrying honestly evaluated his or her family? Because every family has really good traits that ought to be repeated in every generation. Mm-hmm. And every family has patterns that hopefully we can stop in our generation. And one of the great steps of maturity is when we evaluate our families and say, yeah, this is good, that needs to be replaced, that person can help you build a legacy in your life that you'll
so
be very
good.
Proud of.
Well, I want to just squeeze in. We got a call, and he's got a quick marriage testimony. He said he used to play the blame game, and he's just, I think this will be an encouragement. John is calling in from Oaks, North Dakota. John, we just have a little bit of time, but thanks so much for calling in today.
Yep.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that the Lord basically saved our marriage. I mean, when our first part of our marriage, I used to play the blame game with my wife, and through the years, the Lord has, through counseling and so on with me, has just healed me and healed my marriage. And I thank the Lord for my wife and how He's healed us. And my last 15 years with my wife has been much more joyful than our first 15. So,
John, thank you. Thank you so much. And this is just living proof, you two, that God can resurrect. He can, if your marriage has flatlined, He can jumpstart it again. And we're just, we're running out of time here. I'm wondering, Pam, as we wrap up, if you would pray for that person who's in that place that John described that he was in 15 years ago, pray for just a restoration in that marriage.
Lord, thank you so much that you are there for those young couples that are starry-eyed and excited about love, and you're there for those couples that have been seasoned and life has been hard and love has hurt, and you are the author of love. Lord, you're our verses, we love because you first loved us, and you say that you can design love that works, and so we hand you now the hearts of all the listeners in the audience. Wherever they are on that continuum, we know that you care about their love life. Whether they're single or whether they're married, whether it's happy or whether it's hurting, you care. And so I pray as they call out to you that you would be just as faithful as you were to this last caller to rescue and redeem. You would be faithful to every caller, each one of us who cry out to you, O God of love, send love our way, and you will do it. Thanks, God. Amen. Mm-hmm.
Wow, appreciate you both so very much. Thanks for all that you do for the sake of the family and for marriage.
Thank you, Susie. Keep up the good work.
Love being a teammate of yours.
Always good to be with you. The title of their book again is The Before You Marry Book of Questions, Bill and Pam Farrell.
The trouble started when you smiled at me, and our two worlds came crashing together, and true love.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. You can find this whole interview at our website at myfaithradio.com, along with podcasts from Faith Radio Mornings, Connecting Faith, and Everyday Relationships. Well, tune in tomorrow for the weekend edition of Live the Promise. You'll hear my discussion with musician Matt Gilman about his faith and his music, and we'll listen to some of his powerful songs. Well, finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day. Thank you.